Penguin Random House Audio presents The Light Room. This is the author, Kate Zambrino. For my daughters. Light boxes. Otoño. Weeks after the baby is born, summer turns to fall. We begin taking our older daughter to an outdoor class held in an open meadow near the center of Prospect Park called the Nethermead, surrounded by a forest with the park's oldest trees. We meet in a circle dotted with brightly colored plastic blankets, next to a great linden tree that we will see change throughout the seasons, see it green and burnish and molt and green again. Through the following year, the children will play at the base of this moss-covered tree, climbing the big knots of its trunk, jumping off again onto the ground. In the distance, under other trees, other groups of children frolic as the adults watch. The class is conducted mostly in Spanish. The woman who runs it, whom we know, had wanted her daughter to have a parent-child forest school where they speak the language they speak at home, where the outdoors can be its own classroom. She and her family live in our neighborhood, and they have just had another baby like us, another private pandemic baby who sees faces only at home, as everyone's face out in the world is still covered. We sit together cross-legged on the earth's floor, wearing masks and nurse our babies. We ask each other how we're feeling, complain about our carriers, which we haven't gotten the hang of again, report on our lack of sleep. We smile at our babies' open faces, marvel each week at their transformation, wonder whether the younger ones resemble their older sisters, our sensitive and intense children, now aggrieved to be displaced as the babies of the family, not sleeping well at night. Her baby, a couple months older than mine, shoves sticks and grass into her mouth, which her mother patiently digs out again. I marvel at her calm, although months later, I will be that mother sitting there, encouraging little feet to rub into dirt. It is difficult to say how I am feeling. I don't have time to think about myself, what with the demands of teaching at home, which started up again only weeks after the baby's birth, and with the demands of the little ones. At first, it is a labor walking from the car into the park, through the bridge, past the great trees, the boathouse, up the hill, past the waterfall, into the Nethermead. I carry the baby awkwardly in the carrier, having no muscle memory for it. It hurts my body carrying her. I go slowly. Everything is slow. After these Tuesday mornings, one of my 2 days off from teaching during the week, I lie on the couch, nursing the baby all day, my chest tight and painful. Is it from carrying the baby or holding her on my chest during the day as she sleeps? Am I dehydrated or not getting enough calories after breastfeeding all day and night? I don't know. In time, the walk to join the group grows easier, although I'm still not supposed to pick up my 3-year-old, carrying her away from intensities and skirmishes, and I still do. Of course I do. How could I not? On these park days, I tend not to drink water as there are still no public bathrooms, and I have to pee the entire time, my abdomen swollen and tender. Although it is uncomfortable to nurse with a full bladder, I peek a breast out from a wool nursing tank top and give it to the baby, sometimes as I'm standing in the middle of the forest, a few paces away from the others. I take my mask off, eager to feel the cool air on my face, to feel some communion with nature. As summer passes into fall, and then into winter, when I get a few weeks off, my body becomes less leaden, grows lighter. I can walk distances without bleeding, and I know then that I am healing. I worry for my now older daughter, for whom so much has changed in this year of rapid seismic shifts. Like a meteorologist tracking variations, I watch her, wondering whether she will have an explosion of what I have learned to call very big feelings, which happens so often at this age, even without the crises of this year. She is set off on one of the first weeks when her friend, the daughter of the woman who runs the school, is given a certain toy to play with. The children are all given a bag of supplies containing a magnifying glass, a shovel, a metal bucket, a wooden spoon, a maraca, a rainbow scarf, each marked neatly in black marker with the child's name. But on this day, her friend is handed an additional toy by the teacher. I can't remember now what the toy is, though we hear about it for weeks afterward. All I know is that my daughter grabs it from this child's hand, claiming it was stolen from her. When I try to wrestle it back, she loses control, and I have to carry her, even though I shouldn't, many paces away from the group and try to calm her down. Then she takes off, racing across the field toward her friend, and I feel certain she is going to pummel her, take out all her rage on this unknowing child. When I run after my daughter, which I promise my midwives I am not doing, I carry her away, sobbing like she's lost everything in the world, overcome with mortification and sadness and grief, and still tremendous spiky anger, and we take off early, leaving my partner John to pack up with the baby. Sitting by the lake, we look at the ducks, and I let her eat her cheese and apples, slimy slices sitting in the snack tray her father prepared for her. I hold her and stroke her and tell her how loved she is, that it's going to be okay, and I try to listen. I cry too, because she is sad. We cry together. She doesn't like that every child but her seems to know the language they are speaking and to know one another. But soon she will be the elder in the group, I reassure her, and she will delight in saying adios to the teachers, and that is exactly what happens. Is this school? She keeps on asking throughout the fall. Am I really in preschool? Kind of, I say. The next week, she and her friend go to the nearby playground in the park after class, and they ride the tire swings together, being swung around by one of their fathers, and all is okay. But then another time in those early days, her friend and another girl, also their age, take off on scooters, but they don't invite her, and again she breaks down. From that time forward, I negotiate each departure so that the three of them leave together, scooting over the bridge, down the big hill, past the ducks, past the weeping willow and the great trees, through the tunnel before everyone says their goodbyes at the edge of the park, and that becomes part of the rhythm of Tuesday morning. The pleasure I feel seeing their three scooters in a row, a matching candy-colored helmet hanging from each handlebar, great purple, ours, taxi yellow, a solid green. By the end of Otoño, my daughter is 4 years old. Her hair is long, and she has grown a full head taller, now the same height as her friends. She takes off fast over the hill, running away from me, laughing as I call after her. At first, it is extremely sunny in the bright open field, and I wear a big straw hat, and we move under the linden tree to sit under the traveling shadow, and then it grows cooler and darker, and we begin to learn again about fall. I've started to lean into the seasons, their way of measuring time. The teacher, a young woman from Mexico, takes the children on walks across the meadow, has them observe the way the leaves are changing, the linden tree soon covered in yellows and rusts. They walk on the other side of the meadow to the osage tree, picking up the green spiky fruits that look like textured tennis balls. She tries to get the children to walk with her, as opposed to running away, wrestling and playing, jumping on top of each other, parents encouragingly yelling out to ask consent, make sure they're okay with that, make sure they are smiling, an impossible request when they are all wearing masks, but we manage. Often the teacher will try to get the children to collaborate on some task, moving one of the tree trunks that dot the meadow, or sitting on a large branch and making a seesaw up and down, up and down. At the foot of the linden tree, there is a simple setup for making mud pies. Sometimes the teacher hangs a large rainbow scarf from the linden tree, twisting in the wind. I bring the baby up to it, and she watches the colors unfurl. We sing hello to the babies in the group during the morning song. Soon we enter the season of rain. The trees are still a lush green, but before long, the first dry leaves start to fall. The light is such a specific yellow tilting to brown here in the forest. We dress our children in muddy buddies and rain pants with suspenders, and the boots they are so proud of, whose distinct colors become indistinguishable while stomping in puddles. My older daughter wears a set of sparkly blue, which match the inside blue of her raincoat. As I write this, less than a year later, she has, of course, already grown out of them. She crouches in her rain gear at the foot of the linden tree and carefully makes mud pies.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?